Support for Newsworthy comes from Enlivion, providing affordable housing and supportive services to help build strong foundations for a better future for hardworking families, seniors, and the disabled in Charlotte. More information available at enlivion.com. And from Thrivent, a financial services company working with individuals and families to develop strategies for managing their money and planning for the future. More information at mark.hargrove@thrivent.com.
From 90.7 WFAE, this is Newsworthy for Wednesday, April 30th, 2025. I'm Eric Thiel. The North Carolina House passed a bill Tuesday to require sheriffs to cooperate even more with U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement, not just holding immigrants when ICE issues a detainer. Julian Berger has more.
House Bill 318, the Criminal Illegal Alien Enforcement Act, would require sheriffs to keep undocumented inmates 48 hours past their release date and notify ICE 2 hours before an inmate is released. The bill comes as Mecklenburg County Sheriff Gary McFadden has declined to follow up with ICE before releasing inmates. Democratic Representative Jordan Lopez of Mecklenburg County spoke up against the bill, saying it violates due process in the U.S. Constitution.
I was requiring sheriff departments across the state to hold individuals who may otherwise be eligible for release good policy. It requires violating people's rights, spending taxpayer dollars to do so in the process, and it also opens up the state for costly lawsuits.
The bill now heads to the Senate. Governor Josh Stein will likely veto the bill if it passes there, but Republicans could seek support from Democrats to override the veto. Julian Berger, WFAE News.
North Carolina Attorney General Jeff Jackson said Tuesday that he's joined a lawsuit against AmeriCorps, a federal agency gutted by the Trump administration. Jackson says the administration exceeded its authority by cutting funds already appropriated by Congress. The agency's funds include support for dozens of people helping with hurricane recovery in western North Carolina. Two dozen other states are also suing the Trump administration over AmeriCorps cuts. Legislation that would give North Carolina's auditor more power to hire and fire employees is moving through the State House of Representatives committees. State Auditor Dave Bolick, a Republican, asked for the changes. It would let him fire or discipline any employees hired after July 1st at his discretion. That could include dozens of potential employees who would be part of a proposed state government efficiency effort. Artis Watkins is the executive director at the State Employees Association of North Carolina. Watkins told lawmakers they shouldn't have signed off on the bill.
You voted for lack of transparency in government, for less efficient government, where you can get rid of people who are career professional state employees and are nonpartisan and put whoever you want in there. And you voted for a government that's not accountable to the people. Agencies are not owned by politicians that run them. They are owned by the people of this state.
The bill's next stop is a vote in the House Rules Committee. From there, it would move to the House floor. Demographic research projects the percentage of students going to traditional public schools will decline by 2030, and those declines could be sharper in North Carolina when factoring in the impact of private school vouchers. James Farrell has more.
Researchers at UNC Chapel Hill's Carolina Demography told the State Board of Education Tuesday they predict traditional public school enrollment will hold mostly stable through 2030. But most counties will see declines in the overall share of students enrolled at traditional public schools compared to private and charter schools, some dropping as high as 6%. It's even more pronounced in forecasts that factor in the state's recently expanded private school voucher program, said Nathan Dollar, Carolina Demography's director.
For example, we're projecting Bertie County, Craven County to decrease their shares of students enrolled in public schools by over 12% in the east, and also in McDowell County in the west.
Researchers expect to see continued growth in private school and charter school enrollment, with higher growth in private schools driven by vouchers. Charlotte-Mecklenburg Schools is projected to grow by nearly 10,000 students through 2030, the highest projected numeric growth in the state, though the district doesn't rank as high percentage-wise. James Farrell, WFAE News.
UNC Charlotte says six international students who recently had their visas revoked are no longer facing deportation. The students from India and Nigeria had their visas terminated earlier this month. The university confirmed to WFAE that the federal government has now reinstated them. UNC Charlotte says it encouraged the students to keep working with immigration attorneys for legal guidance. The six are among thousands of international students nationwide whose visas were recently restored after earlier revocation by the Trump administration. Relief is coming for small independent arts organizations in Charlotte who rely on city funding to stay afloat. City Council members Monday night voted to release about $1.7 million for small groups like Art Pop Street Gallery, Boom Charlotte, and Baron Dance, among others. The money was approved in last year's budget, but has been held up by procedural hurdles. Art Pop's executive director, Wendy Hickey, said her group is barely hanging on as it waits.
Every month of delay has a cost. For some, and I know for us, it's been eliminating jobs, it's closing programs, and for a few, including Art Pop, we are at risk of closing the mission entirely.
Monday's vote allows the local group Charlotte Is Creative to start processing grant applications from groups like Art Pop. It could still take months before organizations are selected and funded. A bipartisan group of State House lawmakers want new regulations for artificial intelligence. The bill would make it a misdemeanor to create what's known as deepfake AI content. That would include deceptive videos where someone appears to be saying something they never said. But Representative Jake Johnson said the bill would also limit lawsuits against AI developers.
What we don't want to do is overregulate to where North Carolina gets a bad reputation for a bad place to do business, developing or selling this technology or even using it again in state government.
The bill passed its first committee vote on Tuesday. A 24-year-old singer from Matthews has made it into American Idol's top 10. Josh King made the cut after performing Celine Dion's All By Myself on the show Monday night. The local musician was most recently playing piano for travelers in the Charlotte Douglas Airport. He says he's been playing music since he picked up harmonica at 6 years old. In South Carolina, there are only days left in the legislative calendar this year. Our Marshall Terry spoke with South Carolina Public Radio reporter Mayan Schechter about what's going on at the State House in Columbia.
What have lawmakers already accomplished, and what are the big outstanding issues?
Yeah, so this is the first of a two-year session. So, of course, any bill that does not become law this year always has a chance in the next year. One bill that has made its way to the governor's desk is legislation to consolidate three healthcare-related agencies. This is a pretty big deal. Supporters have said that South Carolinians are essentially getting left out in the cold because there's no coordination, communication between these agencies. And this has been a big ask by the governor. So this is big, this consolidation. But there's plenty of outstanding issues that still have question marks, questions over the treasurer, of course, tort reform, liquor liability. There's a big energy bill that's been floating around, and then school choice expansion. That'll likely be signed into law again, but it's a bill that would pay for K-12 private school vouchers using the state budget. The last try was ruled unconstitutional by our state Supreme Court. And so this is Republicans' second go at it.
And the issue of the state treasurer that you briefly mentioned is one that has grabbed headlines, and it's one that still confuses me a bit, to be honest. Now, I understand the state Senate voted to remove Curtis Loftus, but the House still hasn't taken that up. This all stems from a $1.8 billion accounting error, right?
Right. And have no shame here. This is definitely one of the wonkiest of wonky topics. The short, quick way to explain it is it's an accounting error that essentially accrued over a roughly 10-year period when the state switched accounting systems. And it was discovered after a much larger error. You might have heard about it, $3.5 billion. That resulted in the resignation of our then Comptroller General, which is the state's accountant. The treasurer comes into play here because the $1.8 billion error, the fund where it sat, was housed under the treasurer's office. And lawmakers said that Curtis Loftus had a statutory duty to disclose that error to the legislature, and he never did. Loftus told senators that he found out about the error in early 2023, but his staff knew much longer before that. Loftus and the Senate, in particular, have had issues for years. This was glaring for a lot of them. And as you mentioned, they voted to remove him, pretty historic, but the House has sat on it. There's 6 days left in the legislative session. So between that and, frankly, the overall lack of energy that we've seen from the House, particularly Republican leadership, has basically indicated, I think, to a lot of us, the arrows are pointing and them really not probably doing a whole lot about it this year.
I know there's also been a big focus on tort reform this term, changing the rules around liability and lawsuits. Where does that stand?
The Senate passed a large, expansive tort reform package that deals with victims, bars and restaurants, liquor liability, truckers, the medical field, et cetera. The House passed a much more narrow liquor liability bill, making the argument that this is the real need. Restaurants and bars say they will close without it. Both sides, the governor, say that this is a big issue for them. They differ on how to get there. And right now, we're in a bit of a legislative tug of war between the two chambers. There is no compromise as of right now.
Anything in particular that you're watching in the closing days of the South Carolina legislature's session this year?
Of course, what happens with the liquor liability tort reform bill? There's an energy capacity bill. What happens with the treasurer? The budget has really been where much of the Republican infighting has occurred, especially on the House side. And there's some bills that are floating around. We don't think that they're going to become law this year, but that have to do with gambling and the income tax. We are still very much watching what happens to those this year.
All right. Well, thank you very much for taking the time.
Thank you so much.
That's South Carolina Public Radio reporter Mayon Schechter.
It's time now for a fact check of North Carolina politics. This week, we're looking at a claim related to Hurricane Helene relief. In a post on X viewed more than 6.5 million times, liberal political commentator and podcast host Brian Tyler Cohen wrote, quote, "Trump just denied North Carolina's request for FEMA relief from Hurricane Helene, calling it unwarranted." For more, Marshall Terry spoke with Paul Spey of WRAL.
Okay, it's now been about 7 months since Helene hit North Carolina, causing billions of dollars in damage and killing more than 100 people. FEMA said it would pay for 100% of debris removal and emergency measures through late March. What happened after that?
As the 180 days of 100% coverage was set to expire, Governor Josh Stein sent a letter to FEMA asking for them to continue that level of coverage. He received a response on April 11th from a top FEMA administrator who denied North Carolina's request for continued 100% coverage. However, FEMA said that it would pay for 90% of debris removal and those other services. So that's where we are now.
Did they say why they weren't going to be providing 100% anymore?
It says it's not warranted. That's an exact quote from the letter. We reached out to FEMA with a follow-up questions asking, is it because the agency doesn't have the money or it doesn't think that North Carolina's damage is extensive enough? They didn't really answer that question for us. What FEMA did say is that they normally, after 180 days of covering 100%, they usually revert back to 75% of the cost. And so according to the FEMA spokespeople, the 90% that they will continue to pay for is still above what they normally grant.
How much of a difference in cost is it for North Carolina with only 90% covered versus 100%?
We had that same question. So we reached out to Governor Stein's office. They estimate it at $200 million. Now, to put that in perspective, North Carolina sustained $60 billion worth of damage. Now they're getting about $15 billion from a package passed by Congress. Local lawmakers have passed about $1.5 to $2 billion. So if you're doing the math at home, at least $40 billion short of what the state needs. And Stein's office pointed out that every cent from the federal government that they can get, they're going to pursue and try to use just because they're still in such a hole.
What happens with FEMA coverage going forward? And could there be further changes to how much of the tab the federal government could pick up?
There could be. Of course, the Stein administration and Republicans and Democrats alike in our congressional delegation are seeking even more funding from the federal government. But in the meantime, when it comes to debris removal and the difference in the 100% coverage and the 90% coverage, the Stein administration is appealing. So it's possible that if FEMA and the Trump administration see fit, they can bump the coverage back up from 90% to 100%. We don't have an update on that just yet.
So how did you rate this claim by Brian Tyler Cohen?
We rated this claim half true. Cohen said that Trump denied North Carolina's request for FEMA relief from Hurricane Helene. And the half true part is there was a request made and it was denied. But there's some very important context being left out there. And the context being that if you just read that and you don't know the situation, you might think, oh, well, FEMA's leaving North Carolina high and dry. They're not giving them any more money. That's not the case. FEMA is still providing 90% coverage of these costs. He left out specifics here. And I should note, Cohen is not the only one who did this. There were many, many posts on social media that left out this context. Cohen's is one of the ones that got the most attention, which is why we fact-checked him.
All right, Paul, thank you.
Thank you.
That's Paul Spey with WRAL. These fact checks are a collaboration between PolitiFact and WRAL. And for Wednesday, April 30th, that's Newsworthy. I'm Eric Thiel.